Hello and welcome back to the On The Rocks podcast, episode 4. This month I'm joined with Russ Chandler later on, and you'll probably notice I'm not here with Liam this month, and the reason for that is that I recorded the interview with Russ first, and after a good long, nearly in the 40-minute mark interview, we decided, well, we covered most of what me and Liam would have covered anyway, and we don't want to be taking too much of your time up, so we're just going to go with this long interview, and a very insightful interview, if I do say so myself. I think Russ gave some really good answers here, and I think it would be of interest to a lot of people around the club, a lot of questions answered that you may have had floating around your head regarding, especially in regards to the new pitch that is being laid. So without further ado, we'll just go to that interview with Russ. So welcome to the On Rocks podcast, Russ. It's a pleasure to have you aboard and to shed some light from behind the curtain from the clubs. First of all, would you like to just, for anyone that hasn't encountered you before, describe what you do around the club?
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks for having us, first of all, and the opportunity to kind of communicate to the fans. So myself, I joined the club probably, well, in fact, it was 5 years ago now, so it was just before COVID. And then joined the main committee. So I've been involved in the background, probably more at operational level, running around fixing things on match days as there is the break, which is standard. But then outside of kind of match days, really helping with the 3G project, which I know we'll talk about, has been the main one. You know, it's been a few years in the making, in terms of getting to where we've got to now. And lots of other little bits, you know. We're a small team at the club, which, again, we can talk about in a bit. And, you know, we've obviously got Jack. We've got a great committee that do lots. But some of the committee, you know, they're not present in the day-to-day. And that's fine. You know, they add value in lots of other ways. So it's really just being that extra helping hand for the committee to make sure that, you know, I can help in an operational sense as we've tried to move the club forward. People may not know, but my first interaction with the club was when I was 10 years old, playing for Bognor Martlets, as I know many in the town will have done. I then hung around the club. This is before my time in the military, where, you know, I ended up working behind the bar in the old bar for Maggie, with my now wife. So I've had a strong affiliation with the club, and the grass pitch. I've been fortunate enough to play on it a few times, not for Bognor, although Jack saw me once and never played me, but I don't blame him for that. It was more playing for local football and getting to cup finals and things. So I was really conscious, even on that first discussion with them, and I'm not claiming credit for the fact that we were getting the 3G. I'm just saying that, you know, we had a conversation around it. That pitch, and I think I've said this when I have communicated, that pitch, you know, has been renowned for so many years, for being the best pitch in non-league football. And it's been better than some of the pitches at a professional level. And that's, you know, that's credit to all of the groundsmen, the ground staff over the years that have managed to keep it that way. So I was really conscious that the pitch really was part of the club's identity and always has been. So, you know, you have to bear that in mind when you're talking about putting a plastic pitch down. It's like, well, what does that mean for the club? Yes, there's a strong argument and strong case for increasing sustainability for the club. You know, the 3G pitch, ultimately, people think it makes lots of money. It doesn't. It tends to wash its face because you've still got to resurface it at some point in the future, and you've got to make sure you plan for that. So you don't want to have a pitch that's suddenly a weight around your neck. And I know some clubs have experienced that, where they haven't planned appropriately for the future, and they've got the pitch. So, you know, difficult decision. One where there was lots of discussions, lots of cases for, lots of cases against. You know, what does it mean for the players? Because it's all very well off the pitch. The 3G pitch might facilitate a change in direction for the club. But, you know, one of the attractive things for this, one of the reasons the club has attracted the quality of players it has over the years, some of that has been the pitch. You know, it's been outstanding. And who wouldn't want to play on a pitch like that week in, week out? So, you know, you have to consider that as well. So there was lots to think about. The 3G pitch, in my mind, is probably the biggest catalyst that the club will have in terms of moving forward and what that will mean for the club. Because it really does change, and it has to change, you know, the way the club operates, what it delivers, how it delivers it. So there's a lot of planning that's had to go go in for that. And it's, not all of the planning's complete. What I'm not suggesting is that we're going to end up fighting our way through. A lot of the planning's done, but there's going to be a lot of learning as we go along the journey as well. We're quite fortunate. Jack's got a great network, which has come in really handy when talking to other clubs and seeing some of the challenges they've faced. There's going to be a lot of unknowns. We'll face different challenges to other clubs. So, what I'm saying is, I'm not suggesting that the 3G pitch is a panacea and is going to suddenly solve all of the challenges that we've seen recently, but it will certainly help us kind of stabilize where we are, and then hopefully develop some of the off the pitch stuff as well as on the pitch stuff, which no doubt we'll talk about.
Yeah, so while we're on the pitch subject, we'll just go to where we are now at the moment. So we've been trying to keep everyone up to date on social medias with pictures and of all the stuff going on at Nyward Lane. So the latest update pinpointing around about end of November as a return date to the club. How likely is that to be on the money? What sort of factors could change that date going forward?
So that's not an easy question to answer. I'll start with a simple kind of version of it. The 29th of November, I'll be honest, it's a target that I've put to our contractors and to everyone else. The formal contract hands over the pitch to us on the 12th of December. Now, I've looked at the fixtures and gone, wouldn't it be great if we can get home for AFC Porchester? And what a day that would be, and what a fixture to have as your first kind of opening game. So I've been vocal about that target. SIS know that I'm vocal with them about that target. And to be fair to SIS, we have honest conversations on a weekly basis about where we are, and I'll go into some of that in a minute. So the 29th of November is a self-set target date that we are applying a little bit of friendly pressure to all of those involved to try and hit. But the contract states that on the 12th of December will be the completion date. So the formal kind of holding to account will be that 12th of December for the contractors. To kind of what's gonna impact that? Well, weather's the obvious one. Touch wood, so far the weather's been really kind. We are broadly, when I look at the program of work, ahead of schedule at the moment, which is good. But we as a club have also put challenges to SIS as well. So for an example, one example, we've decided that rather than do a standard 3G project where you get all new fencing, we wanted to keep our existing fencing because it's high quality, and SIS themselves said, that's probably a good decision, but it creates complexity for them in terms of planning. So without going into too much detail, if you take the pitch surface itself, because of the drainage system that we're putting in, the pitch has to be completely flat. So the idea is that there isn't a tilt on the pitch, which you would normally have for drainage. We're going to attenuate the rain through the surface. We're going to keep it nice and flat. And so therefore, in order to do that, normally what SIS would do, and I'm not talking on their behalf, but my understanding is they would build up the side to meet the pitch so that you get that perfectly flat runoff into the fencing. Well, we're not going to have that because we wanted to keep our fencing. So there's been some challenges to overcome in terms of the technical design of the pitch, but then also what does it look like aesthetically? Are we going to end up where it looks a bit wonky? And the answer is no. We've had to make some sacrifices in certain areas, but we wanted to keep the pitch size the same because the style of football we play, so the markings, we didn't want to reduce that significantly and have a standard kind of 3G pitch perimeter that you'd see around a leisure centre, for example, or a school. We wanted to keep the surface relatively large. Originally, we weren't going to be able to have artificial surface all the way to the fence line. The fence line was going to come in. We didn't want that, and we held a line there as a committee with good communication with the Football Foundation to try and make sure that we can keep our surface all the way to the fence line, which we've done. But that does mean that as we get 3 meters from the sidelines, there'll be a 3 meter clear runoff, and then it will slope up down into the fence line. And on the same note, our pitch isn't perfectly square, the grass area, believe it or not. So I think you'll probably, for those of you that know the pitch well, the Wednesday stand end up into the far corner where the other turnstile is. That actually is, it doesn't sit at 90 degrees to the other fence lines. And so you've got a kind of an angle that kind of shifts out. So again, if you're thinking about the runoffs down into the fence, that means that that angle is not going to be perfectly flat all the way down. So, you know, what does that look like? Well, it's hard to imagine, but we've done our best to try and come up with a pitch that looks great. But the reason I bring that up is trying to iron out these little bits of detail, which are important, takes time, and has meant that SIS have had to go away and kind of try and redesign certain bits here and there. And so far, I have to say they've been excellent for us. They've been quite flexible. And they've done the best they can with the design, in order for us to kind of keep the bits of the design that we wanted. You know, the dugouts is another good example. We've kept the dugouts as they are. And there's lots of little bits like that that we've had to work through to kind of come up with the final design. But like I say, time-wise, it hasn't impacted the timeline, but there are still some unknowns which may impact the timeline as we move forward. But everyone is aiming latest 12th of December. I'm still applying the pressure for 29th of November. I think it's the 29th, the Portchester game. And we'll see where we get to. But at the moment, like I said, touch wood, certainly that 12th of December date, we're on track for, slightly ahead of, and I'll keep trying to aim for that 29th.
Yeah, lots of things there. I think even people that go have been going to Knywood Lane for numbers of years now probably wouldn't have even noticed with regards to the ground, and it's just fascinating to hear about, really. So for supporters who will be attending whenever that game is, hopefully Porchester, but whenever it is, we do return to Knywood Lane. What will they be encountering in terms of ground differences from what they would have encountered last season in terms of pitch? So, for example, what sort of 3D pitch could they compare it to with other teams that have them in?
So it's really difficult because when you look at the pitch, it's going to look very similar to most 3G pitches that you've seen because we've gone for the FIFA Pro Plus and we've been quite open about that, which again, you know, is more expensive, but it gives you a better quality playing surface for the players and the football. So to compare it to something is difficult. I've been to a lot of 3G pitches as we all have as we go around the pitches and they all play so differently. I'd like it, given the quality that we're going for, to play like, oh, I can't remember the fixture, the last away fixture was on a 3G. They actually had green ink for it.
Hamworth.
Yeah, Hamworth, you know, so nice, lovely ground actually, Hamworth. So that pitch played very quickly. The ball bounced very true. You didn't have all of the spray up from the back infill. So to look at as a game of football, that felt very much like a normal game of football that you'd hope to see when you're watching grass football. But there are some others out there that are at the other end, you know, and I don't like to slate it because we're there at the moment. But you know, I think Chichester will be open with the fact that they've had their challenges. You know, there's a lot of infill in there, which means there's a lot of spray. You know, you can even notice that if the ball's spinning backwards as it bounces, sometimes the ball will actually come back from the direction it's coming. Now, I'm not criticizing Chichester, I'm just saying that all the pitches play very differently. So by going for a FIFA Pro Plus, what that really means is it's high quality, but the testing criteria for the pitch is a higher level. So it's more stringent. So where they'll test something like the roll of the ball, the bounce of the ball, they even test for spray now. All of those things are tested within smaller parameters, essentially. So they're a lot more stringent. So by passing that test, that more stringent test, you would like to think that that means the quality of the pitch in terms of playing on it and what we see as fans is going to be high level and high quality. So that's really what it means when we talk about FIFA Pro Plus. But like I say, if you were to walk onto the pitch, not see a ball get kicked and just see it, it will look very similar to most 3G pitches that you've seen. Stand fast the fact that we've managed to keep our fence in, and the thinking behind that. And Jack, to be fair, was very adamant about this, and it took me a while to kind of probably get into his camp, but I'm 100% in there now. Is that if you've got a ground like Bogner's, which is, in my view, is full of character, is a special ground, what you don't want it to do is start to feel a little bit like a community centre. It's still a football pitch. It still needs to be that and feel that way. And so is something like the perimeter fencing and the signage, for example. You know, it's important that we kind of keep that feel around the ground and the dugouts. It's important that we keep those characters. And I know, you know, people have different views on the dugouts. You know, watching a game from a lower level as a substitute, for example, might not be the best, but it's what makes Bognor Bognor. And so, we've got to nod whilst we're moving with the times of this pitch. We've got to make sure that we keep the character of the ground and make sure that we don't ignore the huge amount of history that the club has had and where the grounds come from, from well before my time. I'd like to think as an experience, it will feel very similar. There would be some other bits that I'd like us to do are in and around the pitch. Is that going to happen immediately? No, I think as a club, we've got to get the 3G pitch down. We've got to settle, learn the lessons that no doubt this will give us, and make sure that we're operating that as best as we possibly can, and then look to kind of grow the other areas of the club off the pitch. There'll be some things that'll happen at the same time, but it's important that we don't rush ahead too much, change too much, and then mean that we miss any lessons that are staring us in the face.
And obviously, the main reason a lot of clubs will be getting a 3G pitch is so they can try and get a revenue stream off it and rent the pitch out. Is there already a queue for people looking that have inquired into using the pitch when it's ready?
Yeah, I mean, so ultimately, we're going from a pitch that's used 6 hours a week to suddenly, hopefully, 50, 60 hours a week. There is a balance. We've had to meet quite stringent, and quite rightly, by the way, part of the grant funding. There are lots of things you have to do that mean that the community are going to get used to the pitch, and quite right too. It's ultimately a community asset, and the funding that we get from the Football Foundation is for that. So there was a bit of work to do early on. We're very fortunate as a club because Mike Carroll, Andy Weir, that youth section over the fence, I mean, is huge, and so well run, and the relationships I think are very strong between the two. Don't get me wrong, there are areas for improvement, not in terms of relationship, but in terms of how we interact with each other. But we, naturally, there's a queue of keen young budding footballers that are on the other side of the fence at the moment, hiring the Arran Leisure Centre 3G, for example, playing at the college, Feltham Community College, and then also playing on the other side of our fence. So naturally, there was already going to be some kind of people that were going to want to use the pitch. I wanted to prioritise them because I feel like, well, two reasons. One is, Mike Carroll and Andy, they do so much, and I know deep down, from talking to them, they'd love nothing more than more of the boys and girls that play over that side of the fence to come and get the opportunity to play on the main ground. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, as a club, where there's so much that goes on within the club that actually we've almost got our own ecosystem anyway. So it's how do we take advantage of that, give back to Mike Carroll and the youth, whilst also making sure that we fill the 3G. So that was the kind of one part, and that was quite an easy bit. There's still some bits to work through, and Andy and I will be meeting soon to just kind of timetable that. But broadly speaking, we've got the plan. Then there is, other external users. We've got the women's football. I mean, who have done unbelievably well in quite a short period of time. There was some turbulence early on, as you'd expect with the new organisation. But I have to say, Hannah and John. And I'm sure Billy would have mentioned them. In fact, he did mention them in the podcast that he did. Billy, Matt, and the girls that are playing. Particularly last year, when there wasn't a lot around the club at first team level to really get excited about. The women just cracked on and were getting on, doing particularly well on the pitch, but also getting organised off the pitch as well. And it'd be wrong of me not to suggest, I know you followed this quite closely, Jane, it'd be wrong of me not to suggest that even that new entity coming in with new faces, etc., the things that they've done really well that we weren't perhaps doing before. And that's, we've got to be open and honest enough to say, well, hold on a minute, how can we do what they've done and put that into the men's setup? So I've gone off on a tangent, but so the women are really important. They're going to be able to play. That'll be a home pitch for them. And to be fair to them, they're playing. Selsey have been really good for them, and they're playing away at Selsey at the moment. But much like the first team, no one can wait to get home and play games. So you've got the women, and what the women does for us as a club and for the youth section now is suddenly we've got young female players, of which my daughter's one who plays in one of the women teams, that have also got a first team to aspire to as well, that's playing at a decent level. And hopefully, if they carry on the way they are, may even be, particularly by the time my daughter's old enough, at an even better level. So, from a supporting aspect, going down and supporting the women on a Sunday, the women, sorry, the young girls coming to play on the same pitch that the women will be playing on is a great opportunity for them. And it just brings it all a bit closer together, and gives us a real home where everyone feels like it's ours, and it's something that we can own and look after and love and have a long future in. And then you've got, outside of that, you've then got, we've got obviously our under 18s playing the Isthmian on Sunday. We've got, we've just kind of started a soft start for the academy. I know we've been here before, but now the 3G is happening, it's much easier to deliver and make sure that we can follow through on that. And we've got under 14s, under 16s, we've got a gap at under 15, if I just talk boys for a second, because we're going to start the academy with the boys and then hopefully venture onto the girls in a year or two. And the under 18s, obviously, all doing very well, actually. And I'm heavily involved there. And that's great to see. So again, they'll get to play on the pitch. So it just gives a real aspiration to the younger players to play there. And then finally, sorry, this is a long answer, but we've reached out. We've got Brighton the Community. They're not called Brighton the Community now, but what they're called. Reaching out, they want to use it for some of their girls' participation programs, which is great. We plan to have 1 hour on a Friday where we can have supporters use it for free, which we'll announce as once we've got it kind of up and running. So they get a chance to play on the pitch as well and come down and play some organised football. And then we've got a couple of charities, Stone Pillow, that also we're going to give them the ability to play on the pitch for very, very cheap rates. In fact, we offer them a free hour as well. So we're ticking all the boxes in terms of community, which is great. But hopefully you can see already that it's going to be quite a busy hub, where lots of football will be played, lots of people from different kind of backgrounds. We're providing opportunities for people to play on in a stadium pitch. So I'm really excited about what the place is going to feel like, not just on a match day, but also outside of a match day in the evenings during the week. Lots of people to serve within our community, which is good. And we've just got to make sure that we do it well.
You started to touch on it there a little bit. Going to move on a little bit onto the under 18s now. As you say, you're involved with them and the academy project, as it were. Obviously, with youth football, seeing impact on the first team, it takes a long time for that to build up to seeing a regular impact. But we are already seeing of some very good young players coming into the first team and having an effect. What have you seen over the last few years change and perhaps develop in regards to the under 18s?
Well, I've probably been involved with the 18s for 4 years now. I think this is my fourth season. Dave Jordan's obviously is the manager, and I assist him. What's changed? Why are these players coming through? Well, there's a couple of things, I think. I think, like anything, when you start, and it was Mike and Carol, to be fair. I've been involved 4 years, but I think it's about 6 years ago. It might have been longer that Mike and Carol decided to set up an under-18 Isthmian team. And you had to start, and they found it very challenging, as it would be. It's a different level of under-18s football to what you'll find on a Sunday. It's more competitive, and it's the quality is higher. So we struggled for a time to kind of compete, and what's happened over time is I think we've attracted some players externally, which has been great. And I think getting the under 18s onto the first team pitch as a starter, is an attractive proposition. Again, back to my original point, who wouldn't want to play there? So that helped attract some players. But also, I think I'd be doing a disservice to the youth setup if I wasn't to say that as the youth setup has built at the kind of grassroots level, naturally we've had more and more players start in a Bognor shirt and then come into the under 18s and stay in a Bognor shirt. And the more players that you get at that level, the naturally, I think the better talent that you're going to get into the under-18s team. And I feel like it's become a bit more joined up as time has gone on. So, yeah, I think, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, the under-18s, the quality of the under-18s team is far stronger now than it was a few years ago. And that's not me being disrespectful to any of our ex-players, because they've all been brilliant and it's been a joy to do. It's just now, I think, that as every year goes by, the team has been improving. We've had a steady flow of players coming up from the under-16 level, which has meant that year on year it's got stronger. Now, it used to be a kind of cyclical thing where, you know, you'd have under-18s football, you can have the first years and the second years, so you've got two age groups essentially in one. And if you've got a gap in one of those age groups, and it means that you might have to bring a team in a year before, really, they're ready for under-18s football, which means that you end up kind of waiting until year three before they're really ready to compete at the top level. But I don't think we're there now. I feel like every year there's kind of six players that move on, there's another six that come in. The challenge for us is going to be, because we have to solve this, and we've got a plan to solve it, is under-18 football to first team football at this level. People underestimate the difference and the challenge that it has for young players in particular. You know, the environment in the dressing room is very different. The quality of football obviously is very different. The physicality is very different. And it takes a strong willed and a player that's highly motivated to make that step up and succeed, or stay in, even just to stay in and around it. So, you know, hats off to your Lennies, your Toby Kingswells, you know, Callum Beck at the start of the season. But these players have got to be mentally quite strong and ready for some pretty tough challenges. And I think they've proven that they are. But in order for us to keep these players for a bit longer, for those that aren't quite ready for that step up, we need to offer some football above under-18s that is a level below the first team, in my opinion. And so, you know, whether it's the B team, I prefer a B team playing men's football rather than an under-23s team, because I think then you will find out for the players, they'll be in men's football as soon as they possibly can. The level of performance they have to put on week in, week out will be slightly less. And so it's on them to kind of tear it up in that men's football world in order to make sure that the first team manager, you know, Jamie has got the option to either call them up to the squad if we're short through injuries, but more importantly, to actually monitor progress as they play men's football and make sure that jump from under-18s to first team football isn't so big by providing that kind of middle ground for them.
Yeah, I think the point on the gap between under-18s and first team is quite an important one to make at the moment, especially because there was definitely a feel at the beginning of the season with people perhaps maybe grasping to those young players as a beacon of hope in a lot of bad results, especially tail end of last season with Lenny Smith in particular, and wanting to see more of them. But their patience is a very key thing for these young players. And it's been brought up by the first team managers who've said they want to protect these players, and I think rightfully so. But obviously, if they're ready, they're ready. And it does feel with that gap as well. When you get thrown into a first team environment, it's very easy to. It's like being thrown into a deep end. Really, you're either going to sink or float, and.
Well, and it's hard as well because, you know, if they're on the bench, and this is the balance, and it is, if they're on the bench on a Saturday, for example, for the first team, and they play 10 minutes, which should be the expectation, is, you know, you want to get on, and if you get on, it's probably not going to be necessarily straight from the start. But then you can't play any football at men's level elsewhere, so you're getting that little taster of men's football. But it's kind of for 10, 15 minutes here and there. And, you know, that's the nature of football, ultimately. You know, you've got 10 minutes sometimes, a young player, to kind of prove yourself and try and get on. So we need to make sure that we can still offer them men's football outside of that while still have them on the bench. And, that, you know, your B team actually doesn't solve that problem. So that's still one that we're going to have to try and overcome and make sure that, you know, whether it's Lenny and Tobin, I'll use them as an example, you know, both great, great lads, exceptional attitudes. Whether or not we just accept that for them, and it's not my call ultimately, this is a first team manager's call, whether or not we accept for them that we're taking them for 10 minutes and they just keep playing at the under 18s, and that's enough football for them, which I think at the moment is it probably is. They're getting lots of under 18s football, and they're proving at first team level when they come on that they can compete and play. So that's great. Like I say, it's the other ones that aren't quite there yet. Let's not just they go off and we never see them again and they go and play for someone else. Let's try and keep them in and around it so that they're still getting the opportunity to play men's football and enjoy their football, which is important at a decent level, knowing that if they do tear it up at that level, then there is still every chance for them to make the step up into the first team. Now, I do think it would be unrealistic to say that suddenly we're going to have 10 under eight, ex under 18 players in the first team. That's not the level of football we're at. We're at a higher level of football than that, and we want to get even higher. We should be looking to go even higher. So I think it's my view, and I don't want to talk out of turn here. I think the balance in terms of Lenny and Toby is probably about right, in my opinion. I think Jamie's managing that particularly well. So yeah, the challenge is there, but I think this is the whole point of planning and making sure that when we get the academy up and running, that we thought about these things and we're looking after both the kids' welfare, making sure that we're looking after the talent as well, because we want to keep the talent in the club. And then hopefully, as time goes on, we see more and more local lads playing in our first team. Because the reason I feel the same, I've got four kids, they all play football. My eldest is 16, and I know he would love one day to play for Bognor. That's a big ask. And I try and manage his expectations to make sure he understands the level of football that it is. But I want to provide that opportunity for them so that, forget my kids, whoever it is, if they're good enough, they will have that opportunity. And that's really important because it makes the fans, we're a community club. We want local players playing in that team because suddenly then there is no greater sense of belonging. Whether you're at Premier League level, you see it at Premier League level, a young lad through the academy going in, it supporters love it. And you can't buy that feeling. And everyone wants them to do well. And it's no different at our level. And arguably at our level, we've got the opportunity to sneak a few more in. While we're here, but we've got to make sure that we look after them, we do it right, and we look after the success of the first team whilst doing it. So we've got to try and tick all the boxes.
Absolutely, and I'm just wary of time, so we'll quickly touch on the first team here before Zoom kicks us off.
Right.
So obviously, we're for context for listeners, we're recording this the day after the 4-1 win at Hendon, so we're in pretty good spirits at the moment. But obviously, it's been a tough start to the season before these last couple of wins. So my question is, how much concern was there in the previous month when the results weren't going our way, and but now how much confidence is there from a board perspective that the club are on the right path and are going to keep getting these results now?
So I'd be lying if I wasn't to say there wasn't concern with the start of the season we've had. Speaking honestly about myself, my expectations this year was always going to be that it was going to be a year of consolidation. And so my expectations weren't that we would ever go straight back up, hit the playoffs, or I honestly felt that with everything taken into account, that mid-table was probably about what my expectations were, and that's not because I haven't got aspirations, or because it's just because with all that's going on, it was going to be difficult to attract players, and it was going to be difficult with a pretty new set of players to get performances going in the right direction. And then obviously there was some turbulence in the management staff as well. So yes, there was concern, but for me personally, and I've been quite honest with everyone that I speak to within the club, I felt like as long as we were going in the right direction from here, let's be honest, the only right direction is kind of up, and I felt that performances were getting better, and the players looked like. There was a unity there that meant that over time performance was improving, therefore results would improve, and I was quite comfortable. It did get a little bit uncomfortable, I suppose, until very recently, where I felt if you take the Rangers Park Vale game, I felt there, we lost that game. Performance was excellent. It was probably, there was no way we should have lost that game. So I tend to look at the performance over the results and what's the patterns that we're seeing. It's just the way I kind of am. Well, that's due to my work, or not, I don't know, but I've certainly over the last couple of weeks, the results have been obviously great because that's important. Ultimately, getting points on the board because we cannot get relegated this year. That was not a question to be asked. It's we have to stay up. And now the results are starting to match what I think has been an uptick in some of the performances. So yeah, I'm more relaxed now than I would have been if you'd asked me this question a few weeks ago. And hats off to Jamie and Hinch, because that was a difficult ask, because I touched on it. The budget's not bad. It isn't bad. So it's not a really, really tight budget for the players, but it's not just about the money. We've got to be an attractive proposition as a club to players. And when you haven't got home, that's difficult. And when you're trying to bring together a group of players to feel unity, et cetera, and you haven't got a place that you can bring them into to do that, I think that was naturally going to have an impact. So yeah, my expectations were fully managed at the start of the season. I feel like we're going in the right direction now. Obviously, results matter at the end of the day because whilst performances are good, we still need to make sure that we continue going in the direction that we are. And everything I'm seeing at the moment in the last couple of weeks is telling me that we are in going that direction. We just got to maintain that now as we go through. And when I do that, I don't necessarily mean up the table. We want to try and, well, we will get up the table. It's more about continuing those performance improvements so that the points keep ticking over, basically.
Absolutely agree. So thank you very much for joining me, Russ. I think that's been very insightful. It's answered a lot of questions I've had thinking over the last few months, and hopefully it's done the same for a lot of our listeners. So thank you for joining me.
That's fine. And thanks for having me on. And like I say, I think once we get back home, exciting times for the club. Onwards and upwards. And then hopefully once we get back home, we can all start enjoying each other's company again and seeing the first team and the women's team and everyone else continue to perform well. So thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to episode 4 of this season's On the Rocks podcast. Special thanks to Russ Chandler for that really good interview there. Hopefully, as I said at the end, answering plenty of questions people may have had over the last few months. Just a reminder, of course, this is a Rocks supporters podcast, so please get in touch with any questions, any suggestions you may have for the podcast moving forward. You can do so across any of the Rocks social feeds or on the YouTube channel in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube, of course. So thank you again for all your support, and we'll see you again on the next episode. Up the Rocks.